marks the suburban wasteland of Denver, Colorado. This is Eat Gamer Episode 9, recorded Saturday, May 9th, 2011. I'm your host, Jeff, here to bring you an outsider's perspective on the gaming industry. Before I begin today, I want to give a quick shout out to the Back Porch Rant podcast. It's a podcast about movies, music, games, anything that entertains you. He's a listener of mine, and I actually a listener of his. He's actually the reason I'm seeing movies again. Ever since I stopped watching television so much, I don't really catch a whole lot of previews anymore, so I never get excited for the movies that are out there. Unfortunately for that, and all the money that I was saving, listening to the Back Porch Rant podcast has me interested in movies again, because suddenly I know what's coming out, and I know what to be excited about. Just go to facebook.com/backporchrantpodcast. So what's new for me? I picked up Brink. This was the new first-person shooter, multiplayer first-person shooter, published by Bethesda. They didn't actually develop it. That was Splash Damage who developed it, but published by Bethesda. And the big thing about this one was the contextual running. That is, you know, if you're just running along, you can hold down your run button, and instead of stopping when you hit a pile of barrels or a railing or something like that, you parkour over it. And if you aim yourself up, then you can parkour up on the ledges, things like that. I'll tell you right now, that's actually implemented really well. I've been enjoying that game. But I'll tell you right now, when I first downloaded it and started playing it, I didn't like it. In fact, I played it for about 30 minutes before I turned it off, and I was just kind of upset by it. I was like, this isn't fun at all. Well, I kind of convinced myself to go back, try it out. I figured that, you know what, this is a game that has a lot of unlockables, a lot of progression content that I haven't seen yet. So maybe I'll play a little bit, unlock some stuff, and see if I like it some more. And I'll tell you right now, having about 8 hours into the multiplayer, I'm actually really enjoying it. My first opinion of it is still valid, and it's going to turn a lot of people away. A lot of people are going to be calling this a very mediocre game, and it is. It is a very mediocre game. But if you enjoy shooters, and especially multiplayer online shooters, and you enjoy the sort of progression, the unlocks that you get, think like Battlefield unlocks, Call of Duty unlocks. This is the same kind of thing. It's pretty rewarding. It's fun. The movement is great. The shooting, there's something a little bit off about it that I'm not real sure about. The maps are almost designed, it seems, more for novelty than to be even, because there's some pretty lopsided maps. But all around, I think you have a very competent game here. I myself bought it at full price, and I won't be asking for my money back. But Brink is a game that got panned, not universally, but kind of collectively by critics. Most of the critics that I trust, most of the review sites that I get my information from, that I collect information from in order to decide whether or not I'm going to be pursuing a game that I haven't been following, most of them gave it pretty low scores. And when I say low scores, I mean 70%, 3 out of 5 stars, things like that. And I was thinking about how much I've been enjoying this game, and thought, you know what? It deserves those. Why did I think that those scores, 70%, 3 out of 5 stars, why do I think that those are scores that are panning the game? Because there really is a lot to love here. So I did a little bit of research. Just a little bit. Not a whole lot. Spent most of my time playing Brink and leveling up my priest in WoW. But GameSpy, Joystick, those two, they use like those 5-star rating systems. Then you've got groups like Destructoid and GameSpot and IGN who use 10-point systems. And then you use people like PC Gamer who are rating things, you know, from 1 to 100, 100-point system. Of course, I always check out Metacritic. which boils everything down to a 100-point system, regardless of whether or not the source was 100 points or not. And I started to kind of see where all of this went, why I thought it was so bad. And it actually goes back to public school. Most public schools, most private schools, I've been in a few of those myself, but most schools before college, out here in the United States at least, they grade us on a 5-star system. It's A, B, C, D, F, you know. And those scores are usually based off of a 100-point system. You know, everything from 100 to 90% is an A, 90 to 80% is a B, you know, less than that, C, less than that, a D, less than that, an F. And at least in my experience, in school, it was really thought of that anything below a B was bad. Like, that meant that you weren't grasping the concepts that you were supposed to grasp, that you were not really accomplishing what you had to accomplish while you were there. And maybe that translates well over to the game reviews. Well, reviews are just about everything. Maybe if you score underneath that 80%, you're not really bringing across the experience that you had intended, or that at least was expected. Maybe you are wasting a little bit of our time as consumers, but that seems unfair. I don't think it translates directly across, especially when you think about the gaps that are there, you know, A, B, C, D, F, that 5-star system, and what's the difference between, you know, an A and a B? Well, you know, that A, that could be a 100% game. That could be, you know, your 5-star game. B is your 4-star game. But you look at a rating scale that rates on 100 points, you could be looking at someone who's 99% against 81%. Those are vastly different scores, and at least for me, they set up a very different expectation for what I should experience. I do think that taking a rating system and using that as how you're going to purchase your games, that's probably a little unfair, not only to you, but also to the gaming industry. Let's face it, ratings are less than half of the review of anything in the video game industry. But how often do we use them as the whole score? How often do we concentrate on them? Well, just look at the success of a site like Metacritic, who doesn't do just video games. They do movies, music. I think they do books. Maybe they do books. That's an entire site dedicated to boiling down a review to a score, and then taking that score and milling it over, figuring out what's the average. Now, they actually have a lot of very good math in place. They will tell you, for individual reviewers, editors, just where they seem to fall in line, if they rate high, if they rate low, those sorts of things. But that's not on the front page. The front page is that Brink is a 70. That's probably fair. But what people don't realize is that a 70 is really worth playing. Especially in this case with Brink. It's not a game like Portal or Bad Company 2 that I would recommend to everyone, regardless of whether or not they were into the first-person shooter genre. But it's good if you're into the first-person shooter genre. You should try it. So what is it that goes into these scores? What is it that legitimizes them? They're obviously not just arbitrary. We continue to trust them. A lot of the times they're spot on, regardless of what our expectations may be for a certain score. Once put in context, they're usually spot on from good sources. Well, the thing that's usually missing, the thing that most people seem to gloss over, that I gloss over, unless it's in like a 3-month-old magazine that happens to be sitting in my bathroom, is the whole review, the goddamn review that came before that 5-star rating, that 1 out of 10 rating. Yeah, there's several pages there of text from someone who's played the game, hopefully, who's played the game to legitimize their opinion, and they're telling you what their opinion is. That score at the end, that's kind of a, you know, that's their aggregate when they have to put everything together. But I don't think it really speaks to how much fun they had or how much value they got out of playing that game. In fact, it's probably pretty inaccurate. I'll tell you right now, I'd probably rate Brink at 2 to 3 stars if I had to use a scale of that type, being completely arbitrary, of course. But I've had a lot of fun with it, and I would still recommend it. It ain't the greatest game in the world, but I'm having a good time. The other thing is that there is that lack of context. You look at a site like Metacritic, and you don't know right off the top, did they have technical issues? If it was a PC game, what kind of hardware were they playing on? Were they in a bad mood that day? Maybe their girlfriend hasn't been giving it up. Maybe their boyfriend hasn't been giving up. There's got to be some of you girl gamer editor reviewers out there. Is there a chance that you didn't give the game, or whatever you're reviewing, a fair shot? There is a lot of context. Unfortunately, we'll never know a whole lot there. The best that we can do to trust any ratings or reviews, something that I already practice, that I encourage a lot of others to practice, really, first off, get to know the reviewer. Get to know that editor. Get to know the person who is looking at these, assigning scores, playing the games, writing the reviews. This does mean that you have to start reading some of their reviews. Or you could go the other route. You could, you know, kind of backtrack, look at some of the games, pick a handful of games, 3 or 4, games that you really enjoy, especially recent games, and give them a rating from 1 to 10 or 1 to 5 or 1 to 100, whichever floats your boat, and then look through the reviews out there. See who matches your opinion. If certain reviewers, certain writers, if they match your opinion more often than not, maybe you should, you know, pay attention to them. Maybe they're the ones who have similar gameplay styles to yours that will be able to point you towards the games that you're going to enjoy, that you're going to appreciate. The other thing is you should get away from just a single reviewer. Really should get away from just using a single site if you're going to be basing a lot of your purchasing decisions on websites or on reviews. You should probably pick up a few, get a small stable of reviewers that you trust. You know, it might even be a good idea to grab a reviewer that you don't trust. Someone who consistently rates down the games that you really enjoy. Someone who has a very opposite gameplay style to yours. It's worth it just so you can contrast the differing opinions out there. There may actually be something that he has to say positive about a game and you realize is very negative for your gameplay experience. Then again, at least coming from me, I'm always in favor of checking out some differing viewpoints. Get the other side of the story. The other thing you can do, you can cut them out entirely. There is that. Add a little bit of context if you do insist. When you read a review, know what genres you enjoy, what publishers or what development houses, their games, which ones do you really get a kick out of? Which ones have done it for you in the past? Let's face it. If you didn't like Oblivion, if you just didn't like the way it played, chances are you weren't going to like the way that Fallout 3 played. If you didn't like Warcraft, well, you could pretty well count on the fact that you weren't gonna like StarCraft. I mean, this works for games that are in different categories as well. People who don't like Diablo 2 and don't enjoy that kind of game, no matter how well Torchlight is reviewed, you're probably not going to get into that either. If you don't enjoy driving games, you probably have to take a review that's rating a driving game very highly with a grain of salt. No amount of stars is going to change the fact that you don't enjoy that kind of game. Of course, something does come around every now and then. Maybe then the cacophony of voices all echoing the same truth should persuade you. Like I said, if you don't enjoy shooters, you really should, or don't enjoy first-person shooters, you really should play Portal. It's not a first-person shooter by any means. It looks like it. That's kind of its delivery method, but that is not the product that it is. The other thing that you can do is trust your instincts. You really should trust your instincts. I'll tell you right now, there's a couple of games that I'm a little concerned about. I've really liked the Dungeon Siege games in the past, but Dungeon Siege 3? I don't think it's going to be that good. I don't have a lot to go off of. There's no gameplay demo out. There's some videos, but this just doesn't look like quite the experience that I've come to expect from that series of games. Deus Ex Human Revolution. The first Deus Ex game is actually one of the games that ruined reading for me. I got so into it. I got so immersed into its story and its world and playing the character that I was really unable to get into books the same way ever again. And I used to be a big reader all up until then. I still do quite a bit of reading, but I just don't have as much fun with it. Deus Ex Human Revolution coming out here, August, late summer, I think. Well, it looks kind of cool. But I'll tell you right now, I don't think Eidos can deliver on this one. I think it looks too good. The gameplay videos don't look special. I'll tell you that right now. I looked through the gameplay, the guy running around in that warehouse. You know the one, the latest video. You can check it out on Steam. That gameplay does not look good. It looks kind of squishy. Kind of soft, kind of muddy. It looks slow. I mean, shoot, there's one where he drops out of the window in front of like three guys on his left, right, center. Kills the one in the center, kills the one on the right, and then turns around and there's the one on the left, still firing at him, doing nothing. Kills him. It's all really slow. That and all the cinematic trailers that they've put out, the ones that are all about the story, those look really good. And I just don't think they're going to be able to deliver on that experience consistently throughout the entire game. As of this moment, my expectations for those games, pretty low. And unless something happens between now and their release for me to change my mind, to change my expectations, I'm probably not going to invest my $50-$60 in them. Because I don't like wasting money. I'm willing to take a chance now and then, but I don't like wasting money. And if the scores come out for those, and they're 70%, I'm really not even going to bother. Because between the two, between the scores, the reviewer scores, and my own instincts, well, doesn't leave a whole lot of hope for a really compelling gaming experience. And I never encourage people to go out and buy games that they're not going to enjoy. I know it can get really tempting, especially those of us on the PC who have access to Steam. They put out a Steam sale. Start dropping a little bit of money here and there. That's only $7. You know, it happened not too long ago. I mean, it was for a game that I really enjoyed. Bad Company 2. Second time I've mentioned it in this podcast. Bad Company 2 for the PC. Fantastic. Great game. I was talking to one of my buddies when they had the Steam sale going. The EA Steam sale. The game was less than $7 at that point. But a buddy of mine online, he had never played it. And I could not figure out why. I asked him if he enjoyed those kinds of games. He's like, yeah, I kind of enjoy them. I liked Battlefield 1942. It was all right. He's like, well, you should buy it. He's like, you know, money's a little tight here and there, and I know it's not a whole lot, but I just don't want to spend it. Well, that's a game that I believe in enough, and I was like, you know what? Here you go, dude. I purchased it, sent him the gift. He downloaded, played it. He's probably put in a total of like 8 hours playing since then. You know, I've really enjoyed that game too. I think one of the best things that came of me purchasing that game for him is that it's gotten me back into it. I haven't put a whole lot of hours into Bad Company 2 for a while now, but I put in quite a few with him. Sometimes that's all it takes to really take a game that's either gotten a little bit old or maybe wasn't all that fun in the beginning and make it really enjoyable. Look at a game like Borderlands. You've probably played Borderlands. Most of you have. It was a really big release. People really enjoyed it. But I want you to look back on your experience in Borderlands and tell me whether or not you would think it was just as good if you had only played single player. If you had played that whole game by yourself. Chances are you're shaking your head. No, it would have been terrible. It wasn't that great of a game. At least, not when played solo. Throw a couple friends in there, and it becomes fantastic. All of a sudden, you don't have to care about everything that's lacking in that game. The complete lack of a coherent, fluid, communicable storyline. Something that I usually look for in a game. Strangely enough, that's missing from Brink, too. They tried, just as they tried. Oh, God bless them, Gearbox over at Borderlands. But the fun thing about that game was getting in with friends and blowing the shit out of stuff and getting fat loot. You know, I just realized the two games that I said I'm not all that excited for, Deus Ex and Dungeon Siege 3, those are both Square Enix releases. That's actually kind of significant now that I think about it, since we're talking about expectations. Square Enix. Oh, what a fall from grace. Depending on how old you are, how long you've been gaming, what your preferred systems were, what your preferred genres of video games have been over the past, Square Enix is one of those companies that, especially back when we knew it just as Square, it was a company that, well, at least I trusted. You know, this was a company that I was excited about everything that they put out. Einhander was amazing. You can look that one up. I remember thinking that when a Final Fantasy game comes out, dude, I ditched school. I was in high school. I ditched school to go and buy the latest Final Fantasy games. Because I was that psyched about them. And the crazy thing is that all my friends were psyched about them too. So even when I didn't have a car, I could still ditch school. We'd all hop in the car, head down to the mall. We weren't the only ones. We'd get down to the electronics boutique. Back before it was EB Games, before it was GameStop. And we'd wait in line for our pre-orders and pick them up. And there were other people there too. Our age, who are probably supposed to be in school. Those times are gone. Not just the waiting in line part, I mean, shoot, these midnight releases are ridiculous. They have them for just about every game out there. That's why I'm not going to those anymore. Heck, besides, at least for the PC, I can just have it downloaded and waiting for me when I get home. But no, those days of being excited about Square games, those days are gone. I mean, let's look at their release history here. I mean, I think the last Final Fantasy game, the flagship title, the last Final Fantasy game that I actually enjoyed was Final Fantasy X. That came out in 2001, 2002, depending on whether or not you were willing to import it. It's 10 years ago, guys. Final Fantasy X came out 10 years ago. And what have they given us since? I did play 11 online. It was terrible. I played it a lot, though, because I had good friends. Goes back to that Borderlands argument right there. Bad game, good people. Keeps you in it for quite a while. But it was a terrible game. I mean, just, it was behind even when it was new. 12? Yeah, I got, like, halfway into that one, stopped playing, tried to come back, realized I'd forgotten everything, didn't remember having enough fun with it anyways to go back and replay. No, wasn't having that much fun. Ugh. Then 13 came out. What a disappointment. 14, which was basically Final Fantasy 11-2. And it bombed. You know, it actually was announced this weekend. Square Enix, their profits are down. They're not doing well. I kind of feel like they're an old dog who refuses to learn new tricks. I guess that's a fitting analogy when you think about the fact that their flagship title has the number 14 after it, the most recent release. I mean, come on. It was a good title. It was a good series. When they were good. When they were worth playing. When people could be excited about them. But who's excited anymore? We've had our expectations dashed way too many times. If I try to think back of the last thing that Square has put out that I actually enjoyed, genuinely had a really good time with, said it before, say it again, The World Ends With You for the DS, Nintendo DS. What a fantastic game. God, I hope they make a sequel. You know, that game deserved a sequel on the Wii. It would have been perfect. Maybe we'll get it on the Wii HD 2360 next. Whatever they decide to call it. But that game came out in 2007, 2008, depending on if you imported it or not. I didn't. So 2008 for me. Once again, 3 to 4 years. 3 to 4 years since the last game that they published excited me. They used to be one of those, Square, at least, they used to be one of these companies who put out one game at a time. And they wanted you to pay attention to just that one game. And it was worth it. Maybe you didn't get releases every 3 months, but man, when they did come out, they were worth it. They were blockbusters. They were on the cover of every magazine. They had posters in every store. They were great. They got my pre-order dollars. But now, like much of the game industry, Square Enix, well, they're one of these companies that they'll put out 100 games every year and ask you to just pay attention to one. Maybe that's not fair. We'll go 10 games. They put out 10, but they only want you to pay attention to one of them. Well, if that one that they want you to pay attention to sucks, what are you going to do then? You know, it's not just them either. Some of my favorite developers, they do the exact same thing. My favorite publishers do the exact same thing. I'll go against the grain here. I'm a huge fan of EA. I think Electronic Arts has probably done more for the industry than a lot of other mega publishers combined. There's a lot to not like about them. That's for sure. But I've really enjoyed their games. Really enjoyed their releases. And I think that they've actually done really good things for sports games. But they're another one of these companies that they'll put out 10 games. Well, with EA, it's probably more fair to say 100 games, but they only want you to pay attention to one. THQ, put out 10 games, pay attention only to one. Activision, put out 1,000 games, pay attention to WoW. They're all the same. And the only way that anything will ever change, it's also the only way that you're ever going to keep yourself from getting taken advantage of, is to purchase the games that are worth buying. When there's a demo, if you're thinking of buying it, download it. Download it, play it now. Otherwise, hone those instincts, beef up on your portfolio of trusted editors, trusted reviewers. Learn how to read those scores, but also keep your expectations in check. Because 7 out of 10, 3 out of 5 stars, if it was public school, you'd pass. Well, thanks for listening to Eat Gamer Episode 9 for May 9th, 2011. I've been your host, Jeff Wyckoff. Make sure that you follow me on the tweeters, as EatGamer. All one word, EatGamer. You can also check out the site for regular updates on the podcast and then whatever else I decide to post up there, videos, blogs, whatever, at www.eatgamer.com. Send me email, eatgamer@gmail.com. Don't forget to look me up on iTunes. Drop me a few stars, maybe a little review. Stick around and listen to a track that I've enjoyed quite a bit this last week here. This is Pandora's Box by Severn Suzuki. See you next week.
Thank you.